Excuse me, this is the operator. I do need to inform all parties that today's conference is now being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the council call on the 8th of May, and we have on the line Brett Fawcett.
Are you waiting for me to say I'm here?
Yes, please. I think that would be better. Please,
okay,
everyone, just confirm that you are on the line. Thank you.
Thanks. I'm on the line.
Jing Zhao?
Present.
Jonathan Robinson?
Present.
James Riddell?
Present. I'm here.
Yos Kieran?
I'm here.
Volker Greiman?
Hello, I'm here.
Thomas Rickett?
Present.
Gabriele Schleck? John Berard?
I'm here.
Brian Winterfeld?
Present.
Brian. Petter Rintel?
Present.
Oswald De Nova?
Here.
Tony Holmes?
Here.
Maria Farrell?
I'm present.
Avery Doria?
I'm here.
David Cake?
Present.
Magali Pazlo?
I'm here.
Amar Elsada?
Here.
Klaus Stoll?
Present.
Daniel Reed?
Here.
Jennifer Wolf? I do not see you on the call yet. Alan Greenberg?
Present.
And we have apologies from Patrick Miles, our CCNSO liaison, who has who is not on the call. And for staff, we have apologies from David Olive, who has to be presenting on another call today. And on the call, we have for the staff, Marika Koenigs, Mary Wong, Rob Hogarth, Barry Cobb, Lars Hoffman, Julie Headland, and myself, Glenn DeSangery. If I've left off anyone, please let me know. Thank you very much, Jonathan, and over to you.
Thanks, Glenn. Thank you for your help. Welcome to everyone, councillors, staff, and those who will be hearing us on the recording or the audio cast if it's functioning. Welcome to today's GNSO teleconference of 8th of May 2014. Glenn, to note that we are expecting Jennifer Wolf to join us only after an hour or so into the call, so as and when she joins, if you could mark her as present from that point, please.
Thank you, I will, Jonathan.
Brian, I know, has got some kind of emergency he's dealing with and would like to take advantage of a provision in the procedures to make an emergency proxy. So, Brian, perhaps we should do that right away in case you are caught up with any other problems.
Thank you, yes. I would like to take advantage of the provision to give Petter my proxy vote for today's meeting.
Thanks, Brian. So that's noted. And, Glenn, if you could note that Brian has passed his proxy to Petter, an opportunity that is available under an emergency if the councillor is present in the meeting but believes that they will have to shortly leave.
Thank you, Jonathan. I will do that.
I'd like to call for any statement of interest updates and note that we have a new statement of interest from Tony Holmes, which has been linked to, and to formally welcome Tony, who is here on the council as a temporary alternate given the recent departure of Mikey O'Connor. So welcome, Tony. I know your statement of interest is linked there. Does anyone else have a statement of interest that they would like to provide an update on? Right, coming to item 1.3, which is to review or amend the agenda. I have noted that Jennifer Wolf, who is instrumental to item 6, may be late, which means we may need to move that a little further down the agenda, so I'll forewarn you of that. And also that 7 and 8, depending on the substantial nature of the discussion we get into and other items, may need to be dealt with as time permits or not. Are there any other comments or questions on the agenda? Thank you. And we note the status then of the minutes of the 27th of February, 26th of March. And indeed, I think the 10th of April has also been posted. So we've caught up with previous minutes, and those have all now been posted. That closes item 1 and gives us the opportunity to move on then to item 2, which is to review the projects and action list. The project list has been updated, and you will have seen an updated version of that. As usual, I don't expect to go through either the project list or the action list in fine detail, but I'll pause for a moment if there are any questions on the you'll see displayed. And if I could remind you, someone just sneezed on the microphone, if I could remind you to make sure your mic is muted so there's no disruption to the call. Hearing no questions on the projects list, we'll move to the action list. And the bulk of the items on that list of action items is covered or picked up and covered and dealt with in further detail during the course of the meeting. I'll highlight three items that aren't. First of all, the multi-stakeholder innovation panel submission that is completed and submitted, and I have confirmed, in fact, that that was received. From memory, it was a slightly unusual mechanism. We submitted it to an email, and it wasn't immediately obvious that it had been submitted, but that has indeed been confirmed. So thanks to all who contributed to the discussion on that. The ESAC liaison to GNSO item is still open. ICANN future meeting strategy, this was something we were going to do some work on, and in fact I sent out in the absence of anything else coming from the council. I think, Maria, it was something you were originally going to pick up on, possibly with the help of James, although I may not be accurately remembering that since this action item list only picks up your name. But I have actually proposed something in the absence of something being circulated. My intention my question really to the council is, it seems that we have an opportunity. The meetings strategy group did talk with us, both out of respect for their work and an opportunity to contribute, which they have given us. It feels to me like we really should say something. And there is a note in circulation on the council list, which it largely supports existing stakeholder group and constituency input, but comes from the council. My proposal to you is to send that as is or modified by any of you in the next 24 hours, but really send it off by the end of this week. We've missed the deadline, and I'd like any comment or question on that. Thanks, James. I see your hand is up.
Hi. Just a matter of apologies to you, Jonathan, to Marika, I know, sent me something on this, and Maria as well. I know that I did volunteer to assist on this project, and I just found that submission at the bottom of my inbox this morning. So my apologies for the silence on this front.
Thanks, James. Appreciate that. It would be also helpful to have you or any other councillors comment now or on list on two points, really. One, are you comfortable with the council submitting something? And if so, that something is the draft that exists on list at the moment. So it would be really helpful to get support for submitting that too. We'll probably end up submitting it directly to the chair of that group now rather than since the public comment period is closed. But we have an assurance that if we get it to them in reasonable time, and by reasonable I'm expecting that means the end of this week, we can perhaps get some consideration of it.
So this is James speaking again. Yes to both points, and I think we can probably have something turned around fairly quickly for review by the entire council. So thanks for kicking it off.
So thanks, James. You know there is a draft that you don't won't need to pick this up from ground level. It's
right.
Really a matter of commenting on the draft.
Yes. Agreed.
Right.
So.
Wonderful. So if I could ask everyone to either, even if you just support the existing draft, that would be helpful, and any modifications you'd like to make, please let me know, and we'll try and send that off by really I think is sort of midnight UTC tomorrow. Thanks.
And Jonathan, if I could ask that folks also please just primarily weigh in at this point due to the time constraints, if folks could weigh in if they spot anything, any factual errors or anything that they just simply cannot support and must object to, if it's simpler a matter of signing on, then we'll take silence as consent, I think.
Thank you, James. I think that covers the outstanding items. All the other items on the action list come up in the body of the main meeting, so we'll come to those in the body of the main meeting. We have a few items then under item 3, the consent agenda, and that's noting Mikey O'Connor's effective or actual resignation from the Data and Metrics for Policymaking non-PDP working group, noting the chair and co-chairs of Data and Metrics group, as well as the Jonathan Zook as chair and Rudy Vasnik and Cheryl Langdon Orr and Olivier as co-chairs, and also confirmation of Avery Doria joining the GAC GNSO consultation group as a replacement for Mikey O'Connor. I will just pause for a moment to hear if there are any objections to those items on the consent agenda. Amr, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. This is Amr. I just wanted to confirm for the Data and Metrics Policymaking Working Group. These are four chairs, not two chairs and two co-vice chairs. Is that correct?
Mind someone else helping me with this one? Let me just check.
Barry's saying in the chat that it's one chair and three co-chairs. Those three co-vice chairs.
Hi, Amr. This is Barry Cobb. I'm sorry. I mistyped that. Three vice chairs. So Jonathan is the lone chair of the working group.
Okay, great. Thanks, Barry. I have no objection.
Thank you, Amr. Right, well, that brings us on then to the next substantial item, or the next item and a substantial item on the agenda, which is item 4, the motion to deal with specification 13 to the new registry agreement. And you will recall that we received a request from the new GTLD program committee to provide advice, we were given an opportunity to advise as to whether we believe the additional provision, an additional provision that was included in specification 13, was inconsistent with the letter intent and intent of policy recommendation 19. Clearly, this touches on a particular nerve on the whole discussion in and around policy implementation and the respective roles of the GNSO and the board, and it's consequently sparked substantial discussion, including some of it very recently on the council mailing list and around. I mean, I think it's appropriate to thank people for significant commitment to attempt to resolve this in a tight deadline, which was we were given by the NGPC, alternatively to advise ICANN that we need additional time for review. So we have attempted in good faith and with a lot of hard work to resolve this within the 45-day deadline. As part of that attempt to resolve, Thomas Rickert has done some substantial work in trying to collate historic perspectives and current and to try and pull those together into a motion, which he duly made to the council and which you see up in front of you now. And this motion is an attempt to respond to the NGPC's letter. So I think, Thomas, as maker of the motion and as someone who's done this substantial work to attempt to do this, I will hand over to you to present the motion prior to opening up the discussion.
Thanks so much, Jonathan. As you pointed out, there is substantial discussion surrounding this motion now, so that I, when I took on the responsibility to take care of, I thought this was a relatively easy matter to deal with, but it turns out that matters that I take care of then become complicated, and I hope that they don't become complicated because I take care of them. But joking aside, let me read the motion for you so that everybody's on the same page, unless, Jonathan, you advise otherwise. Motion in response to the NGPC's letter with respect to specification 13, whereas the NGPC has adopted a proposed specification 13 to the registry agreement to reflect requests by DOT brand TLDs whilst delaying the implementation of additional clause contained therein, which will allow a registry operator to designate up to 3 exclusive registrars. Second, the NGPC has sent a letter to the GNSO Council Chair asking for advice as to whether the GNSO Council believes that this additional clause is inconsistent with the letter and intent of GNSO Policy Recommendation 19 on the introduction of new generic top-level domains. Three, the GNSO Council thanks the NGPC for referring the matter back to the GNSO Council. Four, the GNSO Council has discussed the matter, including with the Brand Registry Group, BRG, and considered the background information provided by the BRG. Five, the GNSO Council has reached out to participants in the policy development process at the time of developing the policy and associated board report on the introduction of new generic top-level domains, 11th of September 2007. Six, the Council acknowledges and understands the proposal made by .brand TLD operators. It is now resolved, one, that the right to use only up to 3 exclusive registrars as contained in specification 13 is inconsistent with the recommendation 19 as one, the language of this recommendation of the final report of the GNSO Council does not stipulate any exceptions from the requirements to treat registrars in a non-discriminatory fashion. And two, the GNSO new GTLD committee discussed potential exceptions at the time, but did not include them in its recommendations, which is why the lack of exception cannot be seen as an unintended omission, but a deliberate policy statement. And second, that the Council does not object to the implementation of Specification 13 as a whole, including an additional clause which allow a registry operator to designate up to 3 exclusive registrars, given the specific circumstances and the fact that public comment period on Specification 13 was conducted in 2013 without objections from the GNSO, save for that from certain registrars which were subsequently withdrawn. Three, that the Council requests that the ICANN board to implement appropriate safeguards for future new GTLD application rounds to ensure that Recommendation 19 is not eroded and that any rights granted to .brand TLDs cannot be used for scenarios other than those specifically covered by Specification 13. Four, that the Council reserves the right to initiate a policy development process potentially resulting in consensus policy affecting both existing and future TLDs if and when the right granted to a brand TLDs is at risk of or bears the risk of being used for augmenting and or circumventing the conditions of Specification 13 or any subsequent provisions. Now, that is the text of the motion. And before I open this up for discussion, I would like to say that we have received 2 requests for amendments for these. But before I get to them, let me briefly state that I have made the attempt to get input from the GNSO as well as from individuals, as you know, from the correspondence that I've sent to the councilors that have been around at the time, and I've shared the responses with you on the councilors. I've had numerous phone calls with GNSO members as well as email exchanges that have been that took place on the list as well as outside the list where I received comments. And what I try to do is to amalgamate the views that I heard and read into a draft motion that is hopefully acceptable to the majority of the council. As previously stated, I had volunteered to take on the task of helping with the subject matter. So I'm not driving a specific mission with this. So whether or not the amendments that have been suggested will be accepted as friendly, I guess will hugely depend on the discussion that we're now going to have. I think I am foremostly interested in showing that the council can provide policy advice in a timely fashion. We have often complained about the board circumventing the GNSO, and now we've been approached by the board, i.e. the NGBC, to provide policy advice, and I think it would be good that we get back to the NGPC in a timely fashion, although I should add that certainly we shouldn't rush things without being diligent. But if we can apply the required diligence and still respond in the time frame that we've been indicated to respond in, that would be most welcome. Now, the first request for an amendment I received from Brett, and he has asked to remove clause 3 of the resolve clauses. I understand that the reason for that is that it would be, or that it is perceived to be premature to discuss subsequent rounds, and that there would be opportunities anyway during the community consultations to make ourselves heard, and for the individual groups to make themselves heard when new grounds are being discussed, so that this doesn't need to be in this motion. I'd like to hear from councillors whether there are any amongst you that have plan to support the motion, but who would consider not to support it in case the amendment was accepted as friendly. So again, I think I would like to give you another couple of seconds to respond to the request, because I would like to avoid a situation in which an amendment is potentially accepted as friendly and by doing so losing the support of individual councillors.
Thomas, just to note, it's Jonathan speaking for the record.
Jonathan.
Look, points. One is that John has questioned from Brett in the chat whether or not you were accurate in explaining the motivation for the change. And Osvaldo has noted that he would support the amended motion. It's not clear whether he would have supported the motion in any event, but he certainly would support the amended motion. And I note that Alan's hand is up. Alan, if you may be prepared to be patient while Thomas goes through this exercise, or you may have a point that you'd like to make right away.
Yeah, I raised my hand because I wanted to make sure my understanding of the wording of the original motion before any amendments was correct. So you
please ask for that clarification now, then, Alan, by all
okay.
means.
The way I read it, and without using any of the mailing list information that I have, it says Resolve 1 says GNSO Council says that this is a violation of the recommendation we made. 2 says that, notwithstanding, we're willing to let it go ahead. If that's not the intent of this, then I think it needs to be, the wording needs to be clarified.
Thomas, can you confirm that that is the intent?
That is the intent.
Okay. You may want to make it just a little bit clearer by, you know, using a word like notwithstanding, because 1 and 2 are in conflict with each other. And it's potentially subject to misreading. Thank you.
Can I ask you, Alan, to suggest a concrete wording in the chat?
Yes, I will.
That would be excellent. I thank you for pointing that out. I deliberately chose the word that the words that we are not objecting to this. I think that earlier today on the mailing list, the assumption was made that we would support the NGBC in what they're doing, or that we're I'm not exactly sure. I need to dig out the words, but that we're positive towards that, and that we're therefore giving way to the board and the NGPC to do things that are inconsistent with policy recommendations. And I think it's important to note that this is not the case. We're not saying that we're happy with that or that we welcome this. And this is why you saw clause number 3 and clause number 4 in the draft motion. What it says is that there is an inconsistency, at least in the view of many councillors. We do not object to this. You know, so we don't say that the process was all right, but we don't object to this, and yet we're looking for safeguards that this doesn't happen in future or further erode bypassing or the recommendation 19 or bypassing it, and we reserve the right to do policy work if and when so required. I hope that helps answering the question and maybe sheds a little bit of light on the concerns that have been voiced on the mailing list.
So Thomas, then just for the record, it's Jonathan again. Brett has confirmed, my understanding of his point in the chat is confirmed that yes, we wanted the motion silent on future rounds. So your explanation and that we, by that he means the registry stakeholder group, or did not see the need to amend that. So that's Brett did not see the need to include that or address that. So that's his point. Dan has indicated that he would support either version. Avery indicates that she is inclined to vote against the unamended motion and needs further understanding before deciding whether she could support the amended. So those are your indications so far. I'm just reminding you of the question you were seeking the answer to.
Thanks. Alan, is that an old hand or a new hand?
Sorry, as I was writing or rewording, I didn't take down my hand.
Okay, thank you. And next one in the queue is Volker. And Volker, when you speak, I would like to encourage you also to speak to the amendment that you've suggested, because that's the next point that I would have come to.
Yes, Thomas, thank you very much. I also cannot support the motion as it stands, as it would in effect amount to the council saying this is in violation. We see a violation of a prior recommendation that is part of policy work that has been done, and yet we step aside, so to speak, and propose that this be implemented anyway, but reserve the right to take this back. I have I think that's the wrong way to go about it. I think the right way to go about it would be to say we see this violation as existing. We see that the missing language, so to speak, that there has not been implemented at this time will require further policy work, and we are ready to do that work, but it's not ready to be implemented at this time. And that is basically what I was trying to achieve with my amendment that I've been that I've posted to the list earlier, which would effectively turn around Section 2 and have minor amendments for the other sections as well.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Volker. It was my impression, though, when reading your request for amendment, that the rewording that you suggested does not answer the question that we've been asked by the NGPC. We've been specifically asked whether this is, I'm paraphrasing here, whether we are okay with with the exception, or whether we see that being in violation of Recommendation 19. And the language that you now suggested is that you are happy with specification to move, 13 to be passed, except for the exception. So we are not responding to the exception.
Basically, by saying that we're happy that we do not have any concerns with the specification being passed, without that, I was trying to be diplomatic in saying passing it with that would trigger our exception, but maybe that should be made more clearer. Not sure if that needs to be. I thought it was clear by saying that as it has been passed already, it's okay, but if that had been passed as well, then we would have a problem, at least
on
the side.
Thanks, Volker. Next is Peter. Peter, please go ahead.
Thanks. Well, first of all, we're not so sure from what I see that this actually is inconsistent. I would rather see it may be inconsistent, but putting that apart, frankly, I'm not 100% clear what 0.02 is right now. Can someone clarify what the text in the mention is before we go further to vote on it?
Clause number two basically states that the council does not object to the implementation. And we provide reasons for why we're not objecting. So we basically give green light to the NGPC that they can proceed with specification 13 as a whole, including the request to have a right in there for registries to pick up to three exclusive registrars. And the reason why we are not objecting in this instance, and I should add that we might likely object on other occasions, is that a public comment forum was held on this specific point and that the GNSO did not object at that time. I think this is more or less to protect the GNSO from being seen as acting inconsistently in itself. Because we're now having a discussion where individual councillors as well as groups do see a violation of applicable policy, and they're asking, or they say that there might be the need for doing a PDP, yet they have not spoken out at the time the public comment period was opened. So I think what I've heard those say in writing that I was in contact with is that, you know, had that been such a pressing issue, they could have made themselves heard earlier. So it might be perceived as being not straightforward to remain silent on the public comment occasion and then wake up basically when the NGPC approaches us and ask for a proper PDP to be carried out. Peter, does that answer your question?
Yeah, before I take out my hand. Yes, thanks. And it's what I hear from you is that the basics in the original suggestion is still there. So then I'm fine with that.
Okay, thank you. James.
Sorry, Thomas, I'm just conscious that you asked a specific question in and around these amendments because you're going to have to come to a point where you decide whether either or both amendments can be, or either amendment is acceptable. So it would be, I think you asked the question, would the amendment impact the way in which councillors voted? So perhaps when you've heard the comments as well, you could just remind people of that question, and maybe Petra could just answer that question. Would the amendment the amendment affect his vote?
Um, Give me a few seconds. I'll read it through again and come back on that.
And Patrick, maybe you could respond both in terms of the amendment that has been suggested by Brett as well as the one that has been suggested by Volker. James.
Thank you, Thomas. James speaking. So just to keep with the protocol here, cannot support the motion as it currently reads. Need to think about the removal of Section 3, Brett's proposed amendment. I don't, my inclination is not to immediately reject it, but, if my issue is with Section 2, which I agree is not consistent with the first resolution clause and would tend to agree with Volker's proposed amendment. I think that if there are concerns that Volker's proposed amendment is also inconsistent, then I think that one sort of bare bones or minimalist approach to this motion would be to strike clause 2 and 3 and simply note that we believe it's inconsistent and that we could certainly address this inconsistency via PDP. And I think that would be, possibly not the cleanest way to respond to the letter, but it would be a minimalist approach. Thank you.
So, James, just to be clear, you would then delete clause number 2 and 3 and thereby silently accept for the NGPC to proceed?
No, I don't believe that's what that... Unless I'm misreading that, Thomas, I don't believe that deleting 2 and 3 would be a green light for the NGPC. I believe it would say, essentially, it would address the narrow question that was presented in the letter, which is that this was not consistent with the with Recommendation 19.
Okay, thank you. I've been kicked out of the Adobe Connect because I seem to have a connection issue here. I think Avi was next in the queue.
Correct.
If that is correct, Avi, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So as I've written, this is Avi speaking, as I've written, I tend against this blanket exemption. I've argued in a couple places that I don't think it's necessary, and even in looking at Specification 9, Section 6, there is the ability for each of these registries, for any registry now, to make a argument to avoid the clause, to basically get themselves an exemption. The idea... And so in looking at the amendment that's being offered by Volker, I'm still concerned that we would give a blanket Section 6 exemption to everyone, and I'm especially concerned because Clause C of that says that each of these needs to be reviewed for public interest. That has not been done. So, yes, I am... troubled by the fact that this goes counter to process. I believe that it is counter to policy as stated and such. I believe the proper way forward is as a PDP. So I think we can answer the question positively in that, yes, we have determined that this is against policy, and B, we need to do a policy process to make a proper recommendation for how to proceed. I think it's reasonable to also add that the current mechanisms, while they may not be as easy or as clear-cut as a blanket exemption for one-third of new GTLDs, is certainly still possible for them to do business as they've deemed they need to do business. They just need to show that there are no public interest repercussions with their specific registry doing what it is they want to do. Thank you.
Thanks, Avery. So I guess unless there are further requests for making comments now, I would like to ask the same question as I did for...
There are two hands.
Are you,
Sorry, that was...
It's Yoav here. I'm not on the Adobe. I just wanted to make a short comment. I'm in the same position as Volker and James, and unless Volker's amendment will be voted in favor, I won't be able to support the motion.
Okay, that was yours. Thank you so much. And Alan, your hand is up again.
Yeah, thank you. A couple of points. I did put some wording in for two if we were to go ahead with two as it is. It's in the chat somewhere. I'll give a personal opinion, and it's certainly not an ALAC opinion, that, you know, I think the proposed wording with the modification I suggested sends a good sign, saying the GNSO, if there are no substantive objections, is willing to be flexible. I think that sends a good message, but that's a personal opinion. If we go ahead with it as roughly as planned, I would suggest a resolve 5, which says this is not a precedent. And lastly, my question is, if we were to vote on this as roughly as it is, or if we vote on anything which says we are ultimately accepting the exception, what voting threshold are we using for this? I would have thought we need a supermajority just as we did for the original PEP, but I don't think that's been discussed. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And maybe policy support staff could look into the question of voting thresholds while we continue our discussion. I would like to ask the question now whether there are councillors who would have supported the motion in its present or amended form, who would not do so if we accepted Volker's amendments. So can I please hear from those that would have supported Volker's amendment? Okay, so there's none. I understand that's the three registrar councillors that would support the amendment. And can I hear...
I would just support Volker's amendment.
Who's that, Amar?
Yeah, this is Amar. I would support the motion with Volker's amendment. I would not support it without it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. And can I please hear whether there are councillors who would... withdraw their support if this amendment was made. I guess there must be some who would.
This is Klaus. I think I have to concur with the arguments AFRI is bringing forward. And I don't want to repeat them, but I think neither motions really address these points, and that I would not agree.
Say the last sentence again. Neither of the motions?
Neither of the two motions address the arguments and which have been brought up fairly eloquent by AFRI and which I agree with. So I would not support the motion. Neither.
Okay. Thank you. Jonathan.
Thomas, I'm just addressing in my capacity as a registry stakeholder group councillor this very narrow question that you've asked, and you should be aware, as all councillors I'm sure are, that the registry stakeholder group representatives do not have a freedom to vote. We vote as directed by the registry stakeholder group, and the registry stakeholder group directed us to vote for the motion as proposed to be amended by Brett. For that reason, we could not vote for the motion as proposed to be amended by Volker. So that would be the position that my understanding is that all three registry stakeholder group councillors would take.
Thank you. Amar.
Hi, this is Amar. I have a question because the in the registry agreement, the inability of registries to discriminate between ICANN accredited registrars is present in two sections. It's present as part of the agreement itself, and it's also present in the Code of Conduct in Specification 9. With Volcker's amendments to the motion, my understanding is that the dot brand registries would still have to abide by Recommendation 19, which would require them to not discriminate between ICANN accredited registrars. Is my understanding of this correct? Thanks.
So anybody would like to respond to that?
This is Amar again, because in the Code of Conduct, point number 6 in Specification 9 in the Code of Conduct says that exemptions could be awarded if applied for, I guess, which includes number 1A, which requires that registries do not treat registrars differently and discriminate between them. But this is also present in the in the actual agreement. So I'm just a bit confused, because the way I see it, the exemption from the point in the Code of Conduct does not allow for the exemption in the agreement. So I would appreciate some clarification on that, because I do believe that changes the context of the motion as Volcker has changed, the amended motion according to Volcker's adjustments. Thanks.
Thanks, Amra. John, have you lifted your hand to respond to that?
It's a pretty fast-flowing river, Thomas. I think in part, but I am more interested in confirming that Volcker's amendment to number 2 effectively eliminates the ability of a brand GTLD to designate a limited number of registrars. All right, is that correct? Am I reading that correctly, that subject to the removal of the clause allowing a registry operator to designate up to 3 exclusive registrars bars that action on the part of a brand GTLD?
Let me pass that question on to the group.
Because if that, I'll get off the phone. I'll get off. But if that is the case, then I would be compelled, based upon advice from the BC, to vote against the amended motion.
The amendment requested by Volcker, right?
You have Volcker in the queue to respond to that question of John. So my understanding is that John is correct, but I think it's better coming from Volcker.
Volker?
Yes, thank you, Thomas. Thank you, John. There's two ways to answer this. One is the short version. Yes, John is correct. That's what it means. And there's a long version, but not necessarily. I mean, as a registrar, I've now seen quite a number of accreditation agreements, and just yesterday I got one where the registry asked us to pay to downpay $100,000 to be accredited in that register, in that TLD, and that's, for example, one means to differentiate between registrars, even without differentiating in a way that would affect the policy. So a registry can, in certain ways, already affect the number of registrars that are accredited to it by designating its own policies and accreditation requirements and tailoring that to a set that only certain registrars can accomplish. If these differentiations are open to anyone and everyone can qualify for that, if he so chooses, then that's okay. Also, on a registrant level, they can, of course, differentiate. It's just, as a registry operator, they cannot set a rule that says, I want A, B, C. They have to say, I want requirement A, requirement B, requirement C, and these have to be fulfilled. That's the policy requirement that we as registrars are asking for, and that's what I tried to convey in my motion as well. As a registry operator, they cannot do that in this way.
Thanks,
policy work, of course.
Thanks for this. James?
So, yes, just to echo Volker to some extent, the answer is, in practical terms, John, the registry would not be able to discriminate. However, they could, their registrant or the affiliates could certainly discriminate and choose their preferred registrar. So the answer would be not by this means, but by other means. And I think Volker said the rest, so I'll drop the remainder of my comment.
Thanks. Thanks, James. There is quite some activity in the Adobe chat, but I think that we need to wrap up this discussion very shortly, which leaves me with asking you whether the two suggestions made by Alan, i.e. to have the additional couple of words in clause number two and the addition of a clause 5, which would then be clause 4 after removal of clause number 3, would change the councillor's view in terms of voting. So I think I would need to scroll a bit to see Alan's comments. The new clause that he would like to see introduced is that this does not create any or establish any precedent. And then there was a suggestion for clause number 2, and that would be adding the words that the council, comma, notwithstanding resolved 1, comma, does not object. And I'd like to hear views on that. First of all, Alan, are you making these requests for amendments formally?
I'm not allowed to make amendments. Would have to. Just as a note, both of those changes presume that we're going to be voting on essentially an unchanged overall motion subject to Brett's removal. Obviously, Volker's amendment changes the whole landscape. And I think those two suggestions that I made were clarifications and language, not changing the intent.
Yes, and thanks for this. To give you my views, having heard all you said and read your comments in the chat, I think that in order to look at the chances of this motion getting support, I will accept Brett's amendment as friendly, while I wouldn't accept Volker's amendment as friendly. And since Alan is not in a position to ask for amendments, I would like to ask councillors whether there is a councillor in the group that would like to suggest the additional wording suggested by Alan as a friendly amendment. And then we can briefly discuss whether that would have any impact on your voting behavior. So, Gabriella. Gabriella, you might be on mute. Gabby?
Thomas, she's not on the line. Gabby is on the Adobe Connect, but she's not on the telephone line. You can't hear her.
So since I'm connected through the audio bridge, can other councillors hear what Gabriella is saying?
No, Thomas, we do not hear her. It's Jonathan speaking. We do not hear audio from Gabby at this stage. I don't know what the options are. We can possibly dial out her, or she can put her vote and or comment into the chat if she's in the Adobe.
Jonathan, we have a proxy for Gabby, which is given to John Berard, if that helps.
Thank you. That helps. So, Gabby, if you need to provide input, you need to put it into the chat. And, of course, we now understand that we have a proxy for you with John Berard.
So, Thomas, we've been at this for more than half an hour now, and I'm conscious of other items. This is obviously critically important to the council, but somehow we have to find a way of bringing it to a head. And as I understand it, you've really got two proposals here for amendments that don't seem to reconcile. So it's a matter of accepting one of them, I think, or neither of them, and that's, you know, subject to the points that Alan has made, which he has argued are more clarification than amendments, so or at least substantial amendments.
Yes, Jonathan, and obviously I haven't been sufficiently clear, but in my previous statement I said that I am accepting Brad's amendment as friendly, while I do not accept Volker's amendment as friendly. So that decision has been made, and I've also asked councillors whether there is any councillor who would like to suggest Alan's proposed wording as an amendment, because Alan formally is not in a position to make such proposals. And if there is no councillor suggesting the wording that Alan suggested, then we can take the draft motion with Brett's amendment to a vote. And if a request for a friendly amendment is made, then I would like to ask you for two or three more minutes for discussion.
Thanks. I see John.
John.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm having a hard time hearing. To my ear, Alan's amendments made sense. Can I see them? And if I can, I would offer them as a friendly amendment. But I'd like to see them before I do that.
You can now see them in the Adobe. Please look at clause number 2, that the council, comma, notwithstanding resolved 1, that's the addition. And then we have in square brackets a new clause number 4, which that will then... Yeah, new clause number 4, that the council's acceptance of a variation from the original policy recommendation may not be taken as a precedent for any future decisions.
I'm good with that. So I would move those as friendly amendments.
And then I will repeat my question to councillors as to whether any of you who considered supporting the motion would not further support it with these amendments. And I'm particularly looking at the registry councillors who have made the original request for amendment and who said that they are directed with their voting behavior, and I'm not sure whether that would impact their view. But I see Alan's hand is up. Alan, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that if you don't consider Volker's amendment friendly, it needs to go to a vote. I mean, friendly says if it's accepted by the mover and seconder, it goes into the motion. Otherwise, it needs to go to a vote, I believe. I think that's standard procedure.
I think we would then vote on the motion that is standing. But again, I'm looking at our council leadership or policy support to help with this.
The challenge here, Thomas, it's Jonathan, the challenge here is that there are two amendments running in parallel, and so to the extent, as Alan says, you accepted that one amendment is friendly, then so be it. To the extent that it's not accepted as friendly, we may need to then vote on that amendment, but I think so...
It's Alan speaking. This is critical enough that I think we need to be careful in following process.
I agree with you, Alan.
And while council leadership and policy support stuff is hopefully sorting this out procedure-wise, can I ask whether there are objections to the latest amendments that have been supported by John. Again, what I'm trying to understand is whether those of you who plan to support the motion would not further support it with the amendments suggested by John. And I'm hearing and reading nothing of that kind, in which case I think we should now follow due procedure and either vote on the amendment or on the amended motion. But I think that the discussion that I've tried to moderate is concluded, and therefore at this point in time I'd like to hand back over to you, Jonathan.
Yes, so Thomas, my understanding is that this is sufficient. Well, A, it has been practiced in the past to vote on, I believe, on an amendment that is not considered friendly. And in any event, it is pointed out that this is sufficiently serious and important that we should deal with it. So it appears to me that you've got a position where you've accepted some amendments as friendly. So you have a modified motion which has those friendly amendments in. You have an amendment that is not considered friendly. So I think we should put that to the vote in the first instance, that unfriendly amendment, and that will tell us then which motion we then have to put to the vote. So I think it's time that we call for the vote on Faulkner's amendment. To be clear, this is the amendment put forward by Faulkner, and it's appropriate that we call for the vote on that amendment. John asks, what is the voting threshold? And my understanding is it is a simple majority of both houses. And Mary Wong and... I'm just waiting for some typing in the chat. Yes, correct. Ching, you are asking what are we voting for? Do we support or not support Faulkner's amendment? So that is, it's a simple yes, no, we support the amendment in its entirety or not. So it's, there's no ifs and buts about it. It's the support of the amendment in its entirety. So Glenn, if we could call for the vote on that, and then we will be left with either the modified motion as proposed by Faulkner, or we will revert back to the motion as accepted by Thomas to be friendly. So let's go ahead and vote on Faulkner's proposed modification to the motion.
Thank you, Jonathan. We start with Magali Pazolo. Magali, can you hear us?
Yeah, now, yes. I don't have an idea about how to vote this. I'm still thinking about, sorry.
I'll come back to you. Oswaldo Nova?
Okay, thank you.
No?
Pardon? No.
No. Oswaldo, no.
Tony Holmes?
No.
Ching Chao?
No.
Brett Fawcett?
No.
Yes. Was that yes, Brett?
That was a no. No.
A no. Thank you. Jonathan Robinson?
No.
David Cake?
No.
You vote in favor, yes. Avery Doria?
Abstain.
Brian Winterfeld, Peter Rinforth, will you please vote for Brian Winterfeld?
I will, and it's no.
Thank you. Volker Greimann?
Yes.
Daniel Reed?
No.
Peter Rindfort, for yourself, please.
No.
James Bledel?
Yes.
John Berard?
No.
Amar El-Fidal?
Yes.
John Berard for Gabriella Schlack, please.
I think Gabriella is on the line.
Gabby, what's the vote?
The vote is no.
Thank you. Maria Farrell?
I vote yes.
Joachim Karen?
Yes.
Thomas Chiquette?
No.
Klaus Stoll?
Abstain.
And I'm back to Magali Pazlo. Will you please vote?
I'm also abstain.
Thank you. The contracted party house, there are 3 votes in favor and 4 votes against. And in the non-contracted party house, there are 3 votes in favor, 7 votes against, and 2 abstentions.
3 abstentions.
3 abstentions.
Glenn, I heard 3 abstentions, yeah.
Correct. I also heard 3 abstentions, Jonathan speaking.
Yes, yes.
So on that basis, the
3 abstentions, yes.
So I don't know if you have a tally there, Glenn, but you described it.
And the tally is 42.9% for the contracted party house, and that is 3 votes in favor, 4 votes against. For the non-contracted party house, it's 23.1, which is 3 votes in favor, 7 against, and 3 abstentions.
So as a result, the amendment does
not carry.
The proposed amendment does not carry, which leaves us reverting back to on the previous version of the motion, which is that as originally proposed by Thomas, with amendments. Thomas, I must be very careful to be correct here, but I understood you accepted Brett's amendment and an addition by Alan formally proposed by John Berard.
That is correct.
So what that means is that relative to your original motion that we have now, which is not displayed properly on the screen at this stage, but it would strike clause 3, add a new clause, what was 5, which will become 4.
Jonathan, this is Thomas. Sorry for cutting across you, but I think that the motion as presented in the Adobe Connect accurately displays the amendments.
I apologize. Perhaps it does. Yes, I'm sorry. I hadn't realized. I apologize. I hadn't realized it was amended. Avery, you have a point of order. Can I make sure I understand? Oh, abstentions, I think you mean, not exemptions. Is that correct?
Yeah. Sorry, I mistyped. Yes. And I just thought our requirements were that if you abstained, you needed to explain your abstention. So I just wondered whether you wanted to do that.
That's a fair point, and so that it is customary, and I believe a requirement to provide a reason for abstaining on a vote. So if you could ask for very briefly in a queue for those that abstained to provide a reason.
Okay. since I've got my hand up and I'm first in the queue, this is Harvey Doria. My reason for abstaining is that while I believe that Volcker's amendment was an improvement on the motion, the fact that the amendment allows Clause 1 of Specification 13 that exempts all 600 new GTLD registries from having to go through the actual review that would review these for public interest, they would also be exempted for that and that, so I would still have to vote against the motion, and it seemed unreasonable to vote in favor of an amendment for a motion I would still have to vote against. Thank you.
Thank you, Avery. Klaus, go ahead.
I just, for speed's sake, want to say that I follow the argumentation of Avery in its entirety. Thank you.
We had one other abstention from the non-contracted parties, House. That was Magale. Magale, are you in a position to provide a reason for the abstention, please?
It's my first time that I abstain, and I have to do this by talking, or I can provide this by send an email or whatever. That's a question.
I think we
or in benefit of the discussion here, but I say this right now.
Yes, please.
Okay, the reason I abstain is because also it's not clear for me. So I go the same direction of Avery. I'm not clear about this public interest on how this motion allows or not. So my case is I don't have enough experience with this. Language, and I got a little not secure about how this will impact the public interest or not. It is the case. Sorry.
Thank you, Magale, for providing that. Right, so we are now in a position that we have an amended motion that Thomas has accepted as friendly and is, as I understand it, correctly displayed in the room. And so unless there are any objections, I propose to call for a vote on this now amended motion. Glenn, could you please take the vote?
I do that, Jonathan. Tony Holmes? Tony Holmes, can you hear me?
Yes.
You vote yes?
Yes.
Thank you. Amar El-Sadar?
No.
Avery Doria?
Sorry, I was on mute. No.
Severin Trost, for yourself?
Yes.
Klaus Stoll?
No.
Severin Trost for Brian Winterfeld, please?
Yes.
Joas Karen?
No.
Maria Farrell?
No.
Magali Pazello?
No.
Daniel Reed?
Yes.
James Goodell?
No.
Gabriella Schlack, I hear you on the line. Gabriella, can you hear me?
Hello. Sorry, I was on mute. It's yes.
You vote yes. John yes. Berard?
Yes.
Thomas Rickett?
Yes.
Jonathan Robinson?
Yes.
Oswaldo Nuova?
Yes.
Volker Greimann?
Nope.
David Cake?
No.
Brett Fawcett?
Yes.
Ching Chao?
Yes.
We have 4 votes in favor for the contracted party house, 3 votes against in the contracted party house, and in the non-contracted party house, we have 7 votes in favor, and we have 6 votes against, which means it's 57.1% for the contracted party house and 53.8% for the non-contracted party house.
Thank you, Glenn. That means for the avoidance of doubt,
the motion
is carried.
The motion carries, yes. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for a substantive discussion that's gone on longer than was planned, but seems to have been necessary. And thank you for your thorough participation and consideration of the issues. From one meaty issue to the next, the next item on our agenda is the issue of it's over the last few meetings has been the substantial item of internet governance in a general sense. In this particular instance, it's more tightly specified and deals with the prospect of a cross-community working group on internet governance to deal with the IANA function at the transition from the US. So this is that there is that ICANN, as you are all very well familiar, is running is the convener of a process to deal with this, and has on the back of the meeting in Singapore has proposed a structure to deal with this, and there is a closing of a comment period, which my memory tells me closes today. And as yet, there is no alternative or complementary parallel process to deal with this transition. But there was, back in Singapore, a proposal for a cross-community working group for a bottom-up type approach to dealing with this that's not necessarily in conflict with but may complement the structure that ICANN has put in place on the back of the Singapore consultation, I think it was referred to as. So here is an opportunity to discuss a cross-community working group and the support from within your stakeholder groups and constituencies for such an effort. And really that's what this item is about. So you will have seen the charter that was that is really it's a proposed draft charter. It's a document that's been circulated and modified slightly. It's had reasonable circulation, but is not yet a charter by any means. And it's a question of whether there is support for a bottom-up community-led initiative where the GNSO plays a substantial part, and you will see a draft of this in the on the screen at the moment. So I open it up to comments as to how councillors feel if you've consulted within your communities and what action, if any, you think we should take. I believe there's an opportunity for us to work with the CCNSO, perhaps in the first instance, and to get some momentum behind a very broad bottom-up initiative, but it would be useful to hear in this instance what the perspective of councillors is on such an effort. Emma, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead and open up the comments and discussion on this.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. I'll open it up with a question to you then, please. What do you envision as what do you envision as the role for the GNSO and the CCNSO getting things started with this? I think that would help me with my opinion at least. Thanks.
I suppose, Emma, one of the fundamental principles of the way in which ICANN has worked to date is the concept of a bottom-up community-led approach. And in fact, if you look at the NTIA transition announcement, it calls for a bottom-up community approach to handling the transition and asks ICANN to convene such a process. So, and indeed, ICANN staff pulled together a broad-based meeting, and on the back of that, the staff summarized an outcome and put a steering group proposal out, which is subject to public comment at the moment. And the opportunity is for one or more SOs and ACs to take a lead on opening up a broad-based community initiative to do something here, or our alternative is to not do something and go along with the ICANN process as modified on the back of the public comment period. And I should say that, in my opinion, these two are not necessarily in conflict or in contradiction. I think there's a way, and in fact I think the sort of very early draft charter envisages that, in which these two could be done together. They're not necessarily opposing ways of doing the same thing. So I hope that helps answer your question. Avery, you have a further comment.
Yes, thank you. Avery speaking. I tend to think that both the GNSO and the CCNSO have special roles in the IANA transition issue. We are the policy recommendation parts of these IANA trusts, and as such, we need to be sure that the GNSO point is not lost in the IANA transition. We need to be sure that somehow or other it doesn't go into a staff intermediary role, et cetera. So I think it's very important for us as a council and GNSO in general to be as involved as we possibly can afford to be. It is probably one of the more critical issues that we're going to have to deal with over the next period. This is not to say that we can't participate in other efforts, but I think it's very important that we don't end up losing the GNSO's particular focus with regard to being an interested party in the IANA transition by our participation solely in ICANN community group efforts. Thank you.
Thanks, Avery. And my sense, for what it's worth, is that the CCNSO feels similarly, but for the avoidance of doubt, any such cross-community working group initiated that is initiated on the back of this discussion that we're having now would certainly not be exclusive to the CCNSO and the GNSO. I think we would have to make it open to all interested parties, and that's a key. That would be a key component of it. But nevertheless, it's a matter of potentially retaining control of our own destiny to some extent, as I think you pointed out. I hope I'm not paraphrasing you incorrectly there. John.
Thank you, Jonathan. I would support Avery's point on this. I have been there's a literary phrase that you cannot separate the dancer from the dance. And in my view, and I think the view of others, as I've seen public comment on the steering committee approach, there is an uneasy editing of certain members of the community from influence on that steering committee. And I don't think that that's appropriate. And it might be that as co-chair with Becky Burr of the cross-community working group on cross-community working groups, I'm looking for a shortcut to some answers. But I think that we should be fully supportive of a bottom-up, consensus-driven, community-based deliberation on the transition of the NTIA responsibilities.
Thanks, John. Any other comments or questions in favor of, comments in favor of or against, or questions around this issue? Klaus, I see you. I note your point in the chat that you can only support this. Dan, I see you are, you recognize that this is critical. And Amma supports John's point as well. So I'm seeing some support for this. The question is, what do we do? I'm happy to work with the CCNSO chair, the leadership, and the staff support of both the GNSO and the CCNSO to stick our heads above the pulpit and make it known that this initiative is available. And I think we could. My sense is that that's something we could do. This won't come as a surprise to others, ALAC, GAC, and others in the broader community. One thing I would suggest to you, and I'd be interested in your comment or support on this, is as part of the public comment closes, as the public comment closes today, I could put something in, possibly in my personal capacity, possibly with support of the council. It may be too soon to have support of the council. I could put a statement in indicating that we believe such an initiative is important, and even submitting the provisional draft charter so that it goes on record and is not misunderstood that this initiative may take place. So that's one idea I have as to how we might at least start the ball rolling and get it formally on record. I don't know if there's any support for or concern with such an approach. I'd love to hear that as well. John, is that a new hand? And Thomas, thank you. I note you would support that submission.
Hold in, Jonathan. I'll take it then.
Any other comment in the chat or by raising your hand for audio input for what I'm suggesting? And I guess I wouldn't mind clarification as to whether I simply write this in my personal capacity or whether I write in my capacity as chair of the council that there is, I could say it's support from the council, but it has yet to be socialized more broadly within the GNSO community for such a bottom-up approach. So Klaus supports it as a personal comment from me. Thomas supports. Thomas, please go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. I trust you as our chair sufficiently to make a statement that also includes information on the continuous discussion. So I would like to see the statement being made on behalf of the council to give the council visibility.
Thanks, Thomas. Any comments for or against that? I really would like as much guidance as possible on this because, it's most important to me that I act with the authority of as many of you as possible. I see Avery, you put your hand up. You put support for that. Dan, your hand is up.
Yeah, I just want to echo what was said. I think it's really important that we go on record as caring about this issue as a basis for ensuring our participation in future discussions. I think that's far more important than, in the short term, the nuance about what I think are relatively slight differences in our perspectives relative to the need to be heard.
Thanks, Dan. And I note that Tony Holmes of the ISP notes initial support but needs further discussion. So Tony and others. I mean, I think I could word something that said that this has been shared with the council and through the council's work with the GNSO more generally, and we believe there's support for such a process, but not for the charter is simply an indication. It's by no means a charter of the group at this stage until the group is formed. All right, so unless I have heard no opposition, and I'm hearing various areas of support for doing something, I feel that if we simply talk about it and don't do anything, we don't go on record anywhere other than within our own sort of minutes. So I do think it does sound like it's sensible to submit something into the public comment on this and make it known. And so I will take that as an indication of support to do that, and I will submit a note from myself in my capacity as chair of the council, and I'll be careful to indicate that this needs further work and development, but I'll attach the draft charter. Good. I think I'll close that item now. It's half past the second hour. That gives us 30 minutes, which is tight for the rest of our agenda, but there was some understanding that we may need to cut off other items on the agenda given the substance of these other elements. And I'm going to now introduce item six, which Jennifer Wolfe is in place to assist us with. And this is to discuss the update on the forthcoming review of the GNSO. And you will note that there was, many of you I think were probably honored, a webinar yesterday on this. And Jen can give us an up-to-date briefing on the webinar and the work of the council group and where this is likely to head to. So, Jen, if you are available to us on audio, please go ahead and give us the latest update and any items you'd like the council to discuss or give feedback on.
Thank you, Jonathan. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, Jen.
Great. Thank you. So, yes, as Jonathan stated, the official GNSO review process kicked off yesterday with a webinar. There were about 50 participants, which was good to have that type of interest. It was a presentation similar to what was presented in Singapore, so for those of you who weren't on the webinar, it was fairly similar to presenting the overview that you all heard in Singapore. We did also kick off this week with the council working party that has been formed, and up to this point, it has just been GNSO counselors, and that's one of the specific questions we have posed today is should that be expanded to the broader community, the GNSO community, or the broader ICANN community? So after I finish my briefing, I'll open it up to discuss that issue. The working party will be used primarily as a liaison with staff, with the SIC, with the independent reviewer who will be selected by staff and by the SIC. And our role specifically will be to assist with the 360 assessment. I think a lot of you are probably familiar with a 360 assessment. It's used very frequently inside companies to help someone with a performance review to give them the perspective of their boss and their peers and their subordinates and potentially customers or anyone that you interact with. And that's really the goal of the 360 assessment is to provide the GNSO as a whole the ability to get feedback and data points from the entire community. And so our role as the working party really pretty aggressively over the next 2 months will be to develop and make recommendations on the framework, the scope, the types of questions that would be asked in the survey, and provide that feedback to the SIC, which will then make final decisions about how the 360 assessment will work. We had discussed in the working party in our meeting earlier this week that to the extent we feel that the 360 assessment scope implemented by the SIC is not complete or that we think additional supplemental self-review is needed, we would then have the ability to make recommendations on further self-review that we want to conduct on our own, either at a council level or at the entire GNSO level. From a timing standpoint, we are in a pretty aggressive time frame. The goal is to have the scope of the 360 assessment completed by the London meeting. So we will be hosting a weekly meeting to keep this process moving forward with our key initiatives to create the agenda, the scope, and the framework of the 360 assessments, and then also to determine if we think we should recommend that we conduct an additional or supplemental self-review. So the questions we have for Council today is, one, do you agree with this approach that we're taking to working towards the 360 assessment? And two, should we be expanding this working party to the GNSO community, inviting participation? Should we expand it to the ICANN community? Keeping in mind that given our short time frame, we need to keep a manageable group. Our target would be somewhere between 10 to 12 people. So how do we allow for active participation while also keeping that group manageable? So I'll pause now and open it up for conversation on those two points.
Thanks, Jen. Can I just check with you, it's Jonathan speaking, that you don't have visibility of the Adobe room at this stage, so I'll manage the queue if that is the case.
That's correct. I'm not on Adobe Connect. Thank you.
There's no one in the queue right now, but I'll just make sure I'm clear on this. You've currently got a GNSO council group, and the proposal is to open that group up to form a working party, potentially involving members of the GNSO and possibly further, subject to a concern that the group will become too large. And in addition, you have mechanisms by which anyone can feed into that working party by virtue of the 360 degree reviews and the open mailing list. So I see Avery's hand is up. Avery, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Avery speaking. So as a member of the working party, I want to add just a few things on this. One of the things that we noticed, at least that I think I noticed while we were doing it, is that at this point we don't even necessarily have all the stakeholder groups' constituencies represented on that. So whether it's a council member or another member of the community is picked is also a possible solution. At the moment, it is all council members, I believe. I think that the group was unwilling to say for those stakeholder groups or constituencies that didn't currently have a representative, did that need to be a council member, or could they reach into the constituencies itself and get somebody to do it? So I think that's part of sort of the intermediate issue of how far do we open it, but do we make sure that at least there is at least one from each of our stakeholders / constituencies. Thank you.
I've put myself in the queue, but I'll defer to John Berard. I'll go behind John. John, fire away.
Thank you. I apologize for hogging the mic as much today. I think that Jennifer, your instinct, if I understand it correctly, to keep things tight and focus on the council is a good idea. I do endorse the notion, though, that we either must have participation or at least acknowledgement that a constituency or a stakeholder group has decided not to participate, vote one way or the other. But I would also suggest that if a councillor, if no councillor can participate, then that councillor should be able to nominate somebody from their constituency or stakeholder group to take their place. So it keeps things limited, it keeps things focused, but it does allow for participation where schedules might get in the way.
Jen, would you like to respond before I make my point? Although I guess my point responds. Let me make my point and then see where you're at. John, my understanding of what Jen was saying was that some form of restriction on numbers probably makes sense, and that might be, for example, two or three per stakeholder group, not necessarily councillors. And my personal view is that we should be very careful not to we should make a call to get participation from as much of the GNSO as possible. Sure, to the extent that a group or constituency does choose not to participate, that's their prerogative. But I feel a little uncomfortable restricting it to councillors per se. I think but I don't feel uncomfortable restricting it to numbers, because to me that's restricting the numbers, because it seems like a rational point of view from a management point of view in terms of the tightness of the timescale. So that's my personal view. I don't know if anyone else has any comments, or Jen, you would like to come back in on that.
Sure, I can weigh back in on that. I agree. I think we could extend it beyond just council members, certainly, to ensure that all of the stakeholder groups feel that they've had the opportunity to participate. We have also had a request from the brand registry group to participate. So part of my question to the council is, should this be extended even beyond the GNSO to the extent others from the community want to participate? I'll just comment there that part of the 360 assessment is to allow groups like the brand registry group to participate. So in a certain to a certain extent, they have a built-in opportunity to provide feedback during the 360 assessment without necessarily serving on the working party intended to be the liaison. But I'd welcome comments from everyone. Should we be extending the opportunity to participate in this working party, again, beyond the council to GNSO members at large and also to the ICANE community of groups like the VRG?
Alan, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Now, I guess I would support a limited going outside. I'm not sure, to be honest, if someone from ALAC or at large would want to participate and take the time to do this, but I think the optics of being open to groups that are active within the GNSO but not formally part of the GNSO would be appropriate.
John, is that an old hand or a new hand?
It's old. I apologize.
So I'm seeing support in the chat from both Tony and Maria on limiting to the GNSO but beyond the council, and just recognizing that there will be opportunity for anyone else to participate via the 360-degree process and the open mailing list. So I'm not seeing any other hands. It seems you're getting a reasonably clear steer, Jen, to go beyond the council but contain participation in the working group to members of the GNSO to make sure that you do have open channels other than that. And I guess I'll take this as an implication, but that a call needs to go out for groups to provide those to the extent that you haven't already got them from councillors or they need to be supplemented, that call needs to go out in quick order. Avery.
Thank you. Avery speaking again. I take seriously Alan's comment about, you know, ALAC or Jack or whomever wanting to perhaps participate or at least observe this. And I still very much agree with limiting the number of participants, but I do think we might want to give consideration to allowing for a number of observers, and perhaps, you know, that can be allowed. But then I come up to the problem of certainly it seems reasonable to allow observers from the other constituted ACSO that might want to observe and be able to comment as questionnaires and as processes were being built. But I do not know how to handle the issue of other groups that are formed outside of ICANN that have opted not to necessarily join ICANN ACs or SOs and yet want, at that point, I think it's best to sort of say they could participate in the 360 comments, but that, you know, the observer status is restricted to, you know, a member from an AC or another SO. Thank you.
Thanks, Avery. And here's a practical suggestion for you. I noticed, I mean, Tony questions in the chat whether observers have to remain mute, and I was going to suggest that perhaps a practical solution. I mean, in terms of representative participation, we have an existing model in the council, and indeed, the council is open to an observer participant from the other SOs and ACs. It happens that ALAC takes advantage of that and participates actively. So my suggestion might be a model which, whilst not restricting it to councillors, emulates the council structure, say, for the NOMCOM appointees, and creates, that may be a model you want to work with for the working party. And if you did go down that route, you could have an opening then for ALAC, ESAC, GAC, whomever, for a single representative from each entity to observe and not necessarily remain mute. Avri, I see you put a checkbox, I think, for that suggestion in the chat. So, Jen, I'll hand over to you. It feels to me like you've got some steer. I hope I haven't unduly influenced that. I've tried to both capture the comments and provide some practical suggestions. Jen?
I think that's the right approach, and Marika and I had discussed putting a call out to the GNSO community. So I think we should go ahead and do that. I will just say, and from a practical standpoint, given the number of big issues going on within the ICANN community, I am not overly concerned with being flooded with people wanting to participate. So to the extent we extend that invitation and see who we have participating, we can move forward and certainly give anyone the opportunity to provide comments through me or anyone else on the working party. And certainly we will be transparent and open. So I think given our short time frame, we should move forward with an invitation to the GNSO and to ensure we have active participation from all of the GNSO stakeholder groups. But to go ahead and move forward with that, so for the invitation.
Okay, thank you very much, Jen, and thank you for all of your diligent work on this to date and those members of the group that have been working with you as well on this. Closing off that item 6, then, we have three additional items, items 7, 8, and 9, and, of course, any other business, and we have around 15 minutes to go. I suspect we can, if we are effective, can cover each of these with a very brief 5 minutes. I know from preparatory discussions that both the work on the IDN variants will have additional, more substantial work to follow, as will who is studies. So I'm going to ask Steve Sheng under item 7 to give us a very brief 5 minutes for now and indicate where he thinks this is going to go. Steve, if I could kindly ask you, just, I know you've been very patient, but to just stick to those 5 minutes or less, and similarly to Mary on item 8. So Steve, over to you for a few comments on this and an indication of where you think this is going to go. I think you're working on a primer on this.
Jonathan, this is Mary. Actually, to beg the council's indulgence, I'm going to be channeling Steve for the next couple of minutes because he's in an ESSAC meeting at the moment. So as Jonathan mentioned, there will be a longer session on the IDN variant program, and the reason for this is to follow on from the Council and GNSO discussions in Singapore, where there was an interest in knowing more about this program and what the role of the Council and the contributions of the GNSO should be. So we're going to schedule a longer session both for the Council and the community. So for the next couple of minutes, this is really just to let folks know, again, following up from Singapore, where there was a request for regular updates from the IDN variant team on ICANN staff where we are. And you'll see that the work here has been conducted in a few phases, and right now we are in phase 4, and we have started seating panels to develop the label generation rules that will be needed in order for the launch of any variants in the root zone. This is a set of slides from Singapore for those of you who were at the IDN update, but it's a fairly informative set of slides, and I can send it to the council list. But again, this is to highlight that here's where we are. And if we go to the next slide, this is a procedural overview of how the panels will work. And if we then go on to the next slide, the emphasis here is that there is still a need for a lot of community volunteers. So while this work is almost entirely technical at this point, so a lot of people have said, well, you know, I'm not a technical linguistic expert, I can't help. I think where the council and the GNSO can help is to solicit members of each of their communities who have the expertise in the requisite scripts to volunteer for the panels. And in the next slide, you see what the panel status is. The Arabic panel is fully seated and has begun its work, and the others that are being formed include those in Chinese, Japanese, Korean, and Neo-Brahmi, and there have been increasing expressions of interest from members of the community in the Cyrillic and Latin scripts. So the last point I want to make here is that Even if the panel's already being seated, there is always a welcome for new volunteers, and one can volunteer to either join a panel that's being seated or create a panel, noting that of all the scripts I've mentioned, this does not fully cover the 17 scripts that have been identified as requiring the LGRs. And again, like I said, in Singapore, the 17 were identified because those were the languages and scripts for which we had applications in the GTLD program. So that's really just a brief status update, Jonathan, of where the work at ICANN is on this technical phase of IDN variants. The important point, I think, is that there is a role to play for the GNSO in recruiting volunteers and, of course, monitoring this work. And so if there are, should I pause for questions?
Thanks, Mary. I think we could do that. My suggestion is to, I think it's the time is tighter than I had first realized, so I think we'll deal with this item and we'll bring the who is up at the next meeting. So let's just pause for a moment and see if there are any questions or comments.
And Jonathan, if there aren't, I'll just note again that we will be scheduling that primer session because I do understand that while there's interest, I think there are people who may feel that they need a deeper understanding of the background as well as the work that's going on.
Yes, and thank you, Mary. I appreciate you doing that and also in particular highlighting the opportunity for input. It may be useful just if you could, let's close item 7 then, and let's open item 8 very briefly for indicating where the status is so that councillors are prepared, because I believe your thought is that perhaps we may need a motion at the next meeting, and it's an opportunity to pave the way for that. So if I could ask you to be just very briefly introduce that and pave the way for where we might go next.
Absolutely. Thank you. And again, this is a follow-on item from the discussion in Singapore where there was a brief update of the weekend session. The note is that all the commission studies on WHOIS that the GNSO wanted have been completed and published, and so it's really a next steps issue for the council, bearing in mind that there's ongoing work within the GNSO and elsewhere in the community on WHOIS, and bearing in mind also that the results of some of those studies are being either utilized, for example, in the privacy and proxy working group, or are starting points for other work, like the new NORC accuracy study that is being started. So it seems that what the GNSO Council might want to consider doing is formalizing the end of these studies, and to that end, Jonathan, I believe that a motion will be put forward for consideration at the next council meeting to do exactly that.
Thanks, Mary. So we'll look forward to seeing that, and I know a lot of work was done on this, and it really is important to, A, close it off properly, and B, decide where to go next. So that's helpful that you sort of pave the way and indicate where that heads. Any comment or question? We're very close to the top of the hour. I feel pretty confident in the work that's going on under item 9 on the planning for London. But, Volker, let me just see if there's anything you want to cover now or if you're happy that's being covered satisfactorily on list, which I suspect you are.
There's just one thing that I would like to point out so we are sure that everybody is on the same page, and that is that Steve Crocker has asked for a specific time to be dedicated on Thursday to the question of ICANN accountability and other matters regarding the IANA transaction. So everybody else has been asked to shift their time around that, and we have been asked as well, and we have decided so far to reschedule the meeting that we had scheduled for the Thursday afternoon, the wrap-up session, and move that ahead to, and correct me if I'm wrong, 8:30 till 10 o'clock in the morning, which may be inconvenient because of the preceding gala, but is currently the only slot available that would not conflict with the topics proposed by ICANN for the same time that will probably be of great interest to all the councillors as well.
thanks, Volker, and it's important. That is a key point on this, on relating to Thursday morning. And I see Tony Holmes has asked in the chat if there is an intention to provide for constituency or SG meetings on the Sunday afternoon, and that we have done that for the last couple of meetings, Tony, and I don't expect that we're not going to do that now. I don't recall if there's anything on a draft schedule, but
I could speak to that. We had briefly considered removing that time because of the time changes asked for by the board for the ICANN-specific time, but we've decided that removing it at this time would be too short notice, and that many constituencies, while not all constituencies, are using the time currently. Many do, and it has been perceived as a valuable time, and I think removing that time slot should be preceded by community consultation or board council consultation. So we've decided to leave the slot as it is for now.
Good. Thank you, Volker. David makes the point that the Thursday slot usually conflicts with working group meetings and ESSAC. And, John, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, I just wanted to put an oar in the water for that late Tuesday meeting that we've been toying with these last couple of meetings, where we convene for a quick meeting to discuss whether anything that has come up in our individual constituencies or stakeholder groups has effect on the agenda for Wednesday. I think that's a good idea. We should continue it.
Thanks, John. I do personally as well, and so that's useful that you provide reinforcement for that. Okay, good. We have run slightly over, but we had some pretty substantial items to discuss, and we also start a few minutes late on for a couple of minor technical and other reasons. So we now have any other business, and I will just make the point that there is a prospect of a public comment on the strategic plan. I'm going to put this to the list and make sure we do ask the question. There is an opportunity for us to comment, and it's another one of those issues where we have to decide whether the council has a role and function in contributing to this in addition to not in place of the stakeholder groups and constituencies making their individual comments. So I think that wraps things up unless anyone else wants to raise anything under any other business. Well, as chair of the meeting, I'd certainly like to thank you all for a comprehensive discussion and for conducting it in an as effective a way as possible, and for giving all of your effort to the critical issues we've dealt with both on the call and in the run-up to it. So thank you very much, everyone. It's been a pretty challenging meeting, but we have some good work behind us, or at least some thorough work as much as we could do in the time available. Thanks, everyone. I'll look forward to seeing you on the email list and being in touch at the next council meeting or in between as necessary in working groups and other forums.
Thank you.